everybody. Today is September 28th. It is 1 p.m. We will call the Los Angeles County Board of Commissioners work session to order at this time. Commissioner Lopez, would you please lead us in invocation?
Certainly, sir. Dear Heavenly Father, we come in your name. And we thank you for giving us a new day, because in this day, we want to honor and give glory to you. Thank you for leading us and guiding us, and thank you for all the favors that you're doing for each and every one of us. Father, we know that you are here in our midst. Thanks for your presence. In the precious name of Jesus.
Mr. Abbott, please lead us in the pledge.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, gentlemen. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Pete Solis.
Here.
Commissioner Hess.
Here.
Commissioner Lewis.
Here. Any changes to the agenda?
No changes.
Okay, motion.
Move for approval of the agenda.
Second.
Commissioner Pete Solis.
Yes.
Commissioner Hess.
Yes.
Commissioner Lewis.
Yes. Item A, age-friendly community discussion with Mr. Tim Chapin. So, Mr. Chapin, welcome. Thank you for being here with us today.
Absolutely.
This was brought forward to us by Commissioner Hess, especially that he had, I guess, with you through an email regarding this organization, community, age-friendly community. So the floor is yours, Mr. Chapin, and to address the board.
Great, thank you. I appreciate you all having me here and your openness to discussing this. I prepared a 3-page document, pared down from probably a 10-page document because I didn't want to put you to sleep with too many facts and figures. And I wanted to sort of operate on the presumption that most of what it is that I might share with you from these 3 pages, you are likely already aware to some extent. Page one, is a letter signed by the governor and lieutenant governor speaking to their support for communities across the state of Colorado to pursue age-friendly designation as part of Lifelong Colorado, which is the state's response to an aging population. The second page, I prepared just some figures both from the most recent census and from some of the population projections from the Colorado State Demographer's Office, because the census hasn't released all of the data yet. So this, I think, is an important snapshot of where we are, and this is probably the part that won't surprise you, because we've been aging as a nation for many years. So, but I think some things, you know, some interesting and really important facts to pay attention to are in that first sentence: Colorado's second fastest aging state in the nation, and particularly in bold, where it says Coloradoans age 60 and up will outnumber those age 18 and younger by 2023. If you look at the population breakout in both counties, you'll see that we have already exceeded and that our population of olders doubles our population of youngers. That's good.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Have you done any more efficient research and extrapolating? Is it because we are retiring the state? Do you think that makes sense?
Well, there, so Every question is going to have a complex answer, and I wish that it were simple enough that I could just point to one thing and say, if we address that, issue solved. And I get asked this question quite frequently, and the answer to the question is yes, I have done tons of research on this issue. We are a really great place to live. I mean, that's been the case for as long as I've lived in Colorado. We've had Texas move in, California, like everybody wants to live in Colorado. And particularly, it's a great place to retire. And so there is an influx of residents moving from other parts of the country. We also solve some of our health issues. We're living longer. And that's happening all the way, everywhere in the world, people are living longer. So that's a contributing factor. When when I say we're aging, not only do we have people living longer, like the population at age 75 and up is one of our biggest segments. People over 80 in Los Animas County are like 418. Like, we have these little pockets of peak age in the state. And when I, so there's aging in that respect, but there's also relative aging, where a relative aging is the gap between youngers and olders. So that's some of the answer on the older side of the equation. So what's the answer on the younger side of the equation? Because that's the other part, right? It is very common. I'm a good example of this. When I was growing up in Fountain, the thing I wanted to do more than anything was leave Fountain, right? And this is a very natural thing for us to do as young people. We have a tendency to gravitate towards what feels like a better opportunity. We go learn, we have worldly experience, and then there's that boomerang component too, which is we hope that those young people come back because they had such a positive experience, or at least they remember the positive parts of their experience, that what they say to themselves is, that's where I want to raise my family. And between that and taking care of older parents, which is part of what brought me back to Colorado, or maybe there's opportunity here that they weren't aware of when they left, or maybe they're better suited to take advantage of opportunities because they got educated elsewhere and they came back. So the answer to that question, I wish it were simple, and there are a lot of pieces and parts, which is what makes this such a complex issue to address.
Is there, in kind of a follow-up, is there any correlation between that, in Colorado is one of the most educated states.
Yes.
More people with bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, live in Colorado. So when it comes to the workforce, I wonder if longevity, quality of life, and education are maybe creating a three-legged stool.
There is a nexus there. You're absolutely, I mean, that is an astute observation. And like, one wouldn't think that education would be an indicator for mortality, but it is. I'm not really a stats guy, so having a deep understanding of the interrelatedness of those dynamics, I just accept that they're true because there are people who have done all of the hard work around that, and rather than argue with them, I figure if I have the same conversation with a lot of different people and what I get in feedback starts to form a pattern, then it's sort of like throwing darts at a board. Like, I pay attention to the grouping. And education is a big part. I mean, this is where young people, I mean, look at what's going on in Denver. Like, this is where young people want to go. Like, when I was growing up here, Denver was not a tech hub. I mean, tech wasn't really a thing then. Anywhere you go in Denver that I remember of not being the part of town that you want to hang out in, it's all new houses and restaurants and coffee shops and just bustling with people. By contrast, we have rural areas that face a unique set of challenges when contrasting compared to urban and suburban settings. The broadband issue, there's so many, the gig economy, remote work, like there were, I talked to some real estate agents and they said that they booked more business in the first half of this year than they did all of last year, because there was an influx of people, whether they are retirees or they were people who could work remotely, that were looking around saying, I want to get out of the city. You know, I want to have some space, whether it's quality of life, fresh air, view of the mountains, lower cost of living, the ability to work remotely. But if there's a benefit to attracting those kinds of workers in terms of growing our economy because it grows our consumer base, then running up against broadband issues is going to have a hampering effect on that in migration. So the on the workforce side, I think that that's an important piece. And then there's another piece that speaks directly to our older citizens. The net growth in workforce is 60 and up. Like, that's where all the solid growth is in the workforce. This is a Federal Reserve Bank report that I could send to you, but I don't have all of it memorized. When I go to job fairs and I ask the employers, are you an age-friendly workplace? Of course, everybody says yes, because what HR director in the right mind is going to say no to that question? But when I ask them, like, can you tell me what you mean by that? That's a more difficult, that assertion is difficult to defend on second pass. And I can appreciate people being feeling put on the spot in that question. And so the let you off the hook question is, well, tell me, like, how old is your youngest worker and how old is your oldest worker? Because that might be an indication of an age-friendly workplace, or it might be an indication that you have somebody who refuses to quit working. We have no idea. But there are programs. There's a new statewide program. It's the only program that's statewide anywhere in the country. It audits an organization's policies and evaluates them to determine if they are, by those criteria, an age-friendly workplace. And older workers bring more to the table in terms of benefit than they do in terms of liability. I'm 53 years old. I don't party at night. I'm not out all weekend. I'm self-directed. I launched this initiative on my own. My leadership abilities are different than a younger counterpart. So there are advantages to having a robust and more fully engaged workforce that is comprised of a good percentage of older people, just as there are advantages to having a strong component of younger workers in the workforce, because the institutional knowledge that exists and the relational skills and the I didn't grow up on my phone and all of the things that we rail about younger people, how their relational skills are lacking, like, they learn that stuff from their older counterparts. And the older counterparts learn from their younger colleagues. It is now said, and I have taken this to heart, that if you are around my age and you don't have a mentor that's 20 years younger than you, it's a misstep. And I thought, sort of runs counter to the idea of mentor, but I have a mentor that's younger than I am because they have a perspective on the world that I just don't have. So the it's not an either or. Everything is, there's an opportunity for the both and, where we can have the advantages of an older workforce component, the advantages of a younger workforce component, so that we're cultivating the next generation of workers, business owners, leaders, ranchers, like, everything that we want those people to be when we need to be replaced. It's our responsibility to create the opportunities for them to do that.
Well, and I think the equation balances when you have a mentor and a mentee.
Absolutely.
That knowledge has to flow back and forth.
Absolutely.
So let me directly back up here.
Sure.
You're talking about that Colorado spends about $2 billion
mm-hmm.
in supporting age-friendly communities. And there are seven programs already somewhere in place, which, by the way, this is no information to me, so I'm kind of learning as well.
Yeah.
So what would it take for a community like ours to say we're an age-friendly community, which I believe we are,
mm-hmm.
and because we have all the services,
yep.
but if you were to put it on a white paper in a bullet format, what are those steps that one has to take as the Board of County Commissioners, maybe adopting something here, but you know, this is just so important as far as attracting
yes.
and retaining new citizens, if you will.
Yes, I agree. So The figure that we are referring to on the $2 billion is the state of Colorado expends $2 billion in both state and federal funds across agencies that touch on issues relative to aging. And the commitment when Senator, then Governor Hickenlooper made when Colorado officially became the third age-friendly state in the state of Colorado, that as part of their age-friendly plan, they were going to turn and take a really hard look at the expenditure of that $2 billion in order to make sure that it was being directed in the places that it would create the greatest return. That might be something that we should always be doing, and maybe to a certain extent that we are, but up to that point, it hadn't been done within the context of becoming an age-friendly state. The other part that, and I will get the answer to your question, but I want to point to Colorado as what they're doing. The other thing that the state of Colorado did, which builds on the early work around becoming an age-friendly state, is that they created, as a result of the Strategic Action Committee on Aging, they came up with Lifelong Colorado. And the entire purpose of Lifelong Colorado, which is a DOLA project, was to provide resources and incentive for other communities in the state of Colorado to pursue age-friendly designation, which is an AARP designation. The goal is for Colorado to become the most age-friendly state in the nation. Right now, that distinction rests with the state of California, but the state of Colorado has an explicit goal of there being 100 more age-friendly communities by 2023, which is the same year that our population age 60 and older outgrows our population 18 and under. I think that that's a coincidence, but they're both happening at the same time. It's also the same time, in my conversations yesterday with the governor's office, I asked him, from a funding perspective, what is the difference going to be from the state's perspective in terms of funding between municipalities that are pursuing or have achieved age-friendly designation and those who have not, as a matter of incentive and being a wise investment of taxpayer dollars? And he said there will be no additional funding till at least July of 2023, which means until then, we are left to figure out how do we fund any work that we do related to becoming an age-friendly community. So here's where I'm going to get to directly to your answer. The age-friendly community designation started with the World Health Organization in response to the global shift in population. And the AARP is the agent of that program in the United States. Other countries have other entities that are shepherding and moving that program forward. The bar to entry into being an age-friendly community is relatively low. One requirement is that it's only open through AARP, it is only open to municipalities that are governed by an elective body, such as a county or anybody who has a mayor. That does not mean, and this was a conversation I had with our DOLA rep, what do we do about special districts? Like, what do we do with the gardeners and the other areas that aren't municipally or have an executive body? How do we make sure that they're not left out of the total equation as an age-friendly community, because they too are facing these similar issues? I think that that's a very important question to explore and find ways to bring them in, and that might be under a county umbrella. So the first step is to craft a letter of commitment, which I have already done, that is signed, in this case it would be you, saying, as a municipality, we are committed to becoming an age-friendly community because, and this is where the document itself gets tailored specifically to the wishes and the priorities of Los Angeles County, because we recognize the importance of attracting a diverse and talented workforce, because we understand the needs of transportation and how right now the most difficult and most expensive mile in transporting anything is the last one, right? Like, we see that showing up, whether it's health, social isolation. If you turn to the last page in this document, you'll see the diagram of the 8 domains of livability. These are just a conversation starter. You pick a challenge that your community faces, and I will point to the domain that it belongs in. Health is a domain. Food security, which is a huge challenge here. Transportation, which is a challenge. The social inclusion piece is a component of this that I was going to break out and share with you so that you could see, like, what are the costs of social isolation? So it is estimated that people age 60 and older spend 7 to 10 hours alone every day. 7 on the low side, 10 if they live alone. That represents, in Los Animas numbers, over 55,000 hours of socially isolated time a day. Like,
you're talking about residents 60 and up. You know, and the reason of my question there is because in the last couple of legislative sessions, for us to engage in a commitment, obviously sounds absolutely fantastic. And I'm a supporter of it because you might have an aging father, and I'm on that direction as well. But the state has, right now, we're going through a huge inflationary period that the nation hasn't seen for decades.
Agreed.
Second, we have had so many unfunded mandates passed on to counties that the last 2 legislative sessions, we are pretty much billions of dollars that the legislature approved that our counties have left to figure out and manage. I think, you know, my personal opinion, not speaking on behalf of my fellow commissioners, it is incredibly outstanding and, you know, commendable to really look at this. I just want us to carefully go through the process that we're not going to be agreeing to a financial unfunded mandate. And then, well, you said that you were going to do this.
Right.
Well,
so I can appreciate that. I'm a very pragmatic person.
Very good.
And the first thing when I speak to a mayor is, how much is this going to cost and am I legally obligated? Right. So, like, I get that that is a primary concern. And my response is, this isn't legally binding. It's the AARP, right? Like, there's no legally binding agreement there. It's a letter of commitment saying, this is
basically
our commitment.
Age-Friendly Los Angeles is your organization.
Age-Friendly Los Angeles.
Bigger organization with our
Age-Friendly Los Animas is a citizen-directed initiative in order to support municipalities to pursue this designation.
Well, asking you that, and we all, like I said earlier, we all sit on a bunch of boards.
Sure.
One of them is DHS. We are at the capacity of the services.
Yep.
The food program, the SNAP, you mentioned that earlier, the SNAP benefit in Los Angeles County is about 400,000.
Yep.
We get out. So if we see the need for that being serviced, I am on the board of Council of Governments who oversees the AAA program,
which will be on a meeting together tomorrow.
And so they also have, Veronica also takes care of the food pantry commodity program here in Los Angeles County too, which all 3 commissioners, when they have time, attend and volunteer to help out with that. So some of these services that you're talking about here already exist.
Yes.
So basically, is this just, is this program to acknowledge that we're an age-friendly community, basically, and this just basically gives us a designation?
Well, so I think that's a wonderful question. And the thing that I think is worth acknowledging is that there is a part of this that is a branding exercise. It's sort of like, you know, the Better Business Bureau, right? You see it on the door and you go, oh, like somebody else appreciates what they're doing. I now feel safe doing business with them, or health department or a restaurant, any of those sort of credibility building things. That is, I think, a really useful component of this, and it is barely scratches the surface of what's significant. What it does say is it expresses to the community, to the voters, of which the vast majority, almost 50%, are 50 and over. So they're having, they're living the same, like, my mom passed, my dad's 81, I drive to Denver twice a month, I'll be going there tomorrow morning for a week. You know, like, I live the current reality of what it means to have a parent who's 80. And I'm 53, so I see it and I feel it acutely. Like when I wake up or I know it's gonna rain, I feel it in my knee, you know? So this is like the lived reality for nearly half of our population. And while I agree that there are lots of programs that are already in place that are doing a fine job, there are some programs in place that could do a better job. I'm not the arbiter of who's doing their job or not. The question is, how do we take the best of what we have and include that in what it is that we feel we need to create as a community in order to address the situation that we face? Because as it states in this document, if you look in the biggest yellow bubble on page 2 on the right, like, all of the solutions that have been created over decades were not done in a strategic way. They were done in response to a challenge. Like, something popped up and we put out the fire. We've been doing it for decades, right? And so now we have this collection of solutions that may or may not hit the mark. I don't know. That's part of the second phase of this work, is to take, just like the state is looking at their $2 billion worth of expenditures, all of our programs are worth evaluating. You know, and I'm not saying that we have to evaluate every program all at once. If you look at these 8 domains, one of the domains is communication, right? So as I've been going out in the community and facilitating workshops in the community and saying, hey, here are the 8 domains of livability. Like, let's have a conversation about what is your experience, what is your lived experience, and which of these domains is the burr in your saddle, right? And sometimes people say, oh, food insecurity, right? And I'm like, okay, let's like explore food insecurity. Like, what does that look like? What are you seeing in your community? What is your personal experience? And now, because I'm a designer, I facilitate them through a design process where they identify the challenge that's most pressing for them. They brainstorm ideas, they build prototypes in order to get their ideas out on the table into three-dimensional form and see what that solution looks like. And the natural extension of that is, oh, is this an idea that we've not thought of? I mean, the ideas that people come up with for how do we address food insecurity, like, oh, we should have a mobile grocery store. Oh, but there's not enough need for that. But we don't have transportation between Levita and Walsenburg. So what if we had a vehicle that a certain number of days transported people and the other days it was a mobile grocery store, right? And like, wow, you're 12. Like, where are you coming up with these ideas?
And in my 12-plus years of facilitating this process, the most amazing ideas come from the most unexpected places. It's usually from the people who don't know, right? Because they're not limited, their imagination isn't hampered by too much knowledge, which is, it just is, right? And
sometimes the advertisement's not out there to let them know the service.
Exactly, so this is a communication issue, because like,
Council of Governments has transportation in all these areas.
Absolutely.
It's not being promoted.
Yeah.
It's being underutilized.
Yeah, so this is where, like, I'm a big fan of, like, as I spoke when I was talking with Phil on the phone, like, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm not coming in here and pointing the finger and saying, hey, we have all these problems and nobody's doing anything about it. Like, far from it. Like, I have been out in these communities witnessing and being a part of these programs that are already in place because I wanted to experience firsthand, like, do they work? Who uses them? This, you know, this little free library version of a pantry faces south. I guess we'd better not put anything perishable in there. You know, like, the solutions that we have are, you know, there's a saying, what got you here won't get you there, right? There's no plan, there's no solution that is 100% and lives forever. Like, the world changes, the situation changes, now we've got unfunded mandates, which is a part that I want to come back to. The situation changes. So we need to be able to have like a living plan, one that is designed to anticipate that the conditions under which it's being put into place are going to change. And how do we go about doing that?
So these eight tenants that you have here, you have to put it in somewhat of a priority.
What sure.
Some of the bigger challenges. I know here in Trinidad and San Luis County, housing is just almost non-existent.
So I certainly have my own personal answer to that, which I'm not particularly interested in, and nor do I think that it sheds a whole lot of light on the situations that we face. So the answer to your question is, from the people's perspective, in both counties, when I created a survey and put this to them, where we got over 600 responses to this, housing by far is the number one issue, and I created two separate groups because I wanted the data sets to be clean of one another, all right, to see, like, where are there areas where the challenges are similar but slightly different depending upon where you are, all right? Levita's housing situation is different than Branson's. Trinidad's is different than Walsenburg's. Like, there's no presumption that while housing as a category is twice as pressing as this number two issue, twice. And it makes sense, right? Food, clothing, shelter are three primary needs, which if not met, we can't be creative, right? So if I were gonna prioritize them, my approach is to not, I don't have answers to anything. Like, I can explain the trends that I've analyzed. I can share with you some thoughts I have on strategy moving forward. I can share with you that I talked to the governor's office, I talked to AARP, I talked to DOLA, I talked to the school systems, I talked to big business, little business, nonprofits, old people, young people. Like, I am a walking sensor of what is going on the ground. The tendency to be the expert that has the answer to the question, while it might make certain individuals feel good, it falls incredibly short of what it is that we need in order to address these challenges. What we need is really good questions. Really good questions are a part of the work that I've been doing for the last 15 years. So I don't have an answer.
So overall, this program, mm-hmm. is it a program? Is it just a designation? Like we were discussing earlier, because it basically would be a stamp on Los Angeles County.
That part, yeah.
Being that, who oversees your program, and how many counties are involved in signing?
So, I live in this region, and so this is where I've started. Because in my professional career, I've worked internationally. You know, I've been a consultant that comes in from the outside. I do my work, you know, you throw the pebble in the pond and I'm off to another client engagement and I never see the ripple hit the shore. And while there's like some, you know, it's gratifying to find myself working in different environments like that, one of the things that I've discovered about myself is that, and this is a conversation that I had with my dad, he said, right in the corner where you are. Like, there's so much transformative work that can be done right outside your own door. Why go back to India and do this? Like, there's enough right here. And I want to start doing this work in the communities that I spend my time, because this is where I intend to retire, and I want these communities to be in a good position to receive me when I'm 80. Like, there's a part of this that is selfish on my part, you know? Like, I want to know that if I'm in a wheelchair, that despite that we have new ADA compliant ramps on the corner, what are we going to do about the gravel in between? Like, that I want to know that there are opportunities for me to engage with younger people, because the costs of social isolation are incredible. I mean, the contribution that older folks make in a community, they spend, they vote, they volunteer, they don't cause any problems. Their biggest expenditure to the community is every single person. The United States spends between 6.7 and 7 billion dollars a year because of social isolation. That's $134 per person per year. Now,
if I may.
Sure.
I want to interject here, yeah, and just say that I really appreciate this narrative, because I sit on some many boards that Commissioner Lopez alluded to, that one of the main topics of concern is how do we get our young people back into the community. And so you see this push, this opportunity to have this dialogue, is that going to be competitive with what they're trying to do? Say Wally Wallace and Jerry Chatterley from Raton, they pushed that other narrative with let's get hiking, biking, and all this.
Absolutely.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Do you see this going to be a competitive issue?
No, I think it's complementary, because the aim of engaging youngers and olders in the context of building an age-friendly community is different than the intended outcome from creating a recreation-oriented economy. Like, they're not the same thing. However, I think that they're complementary, because the folks who are interested in those kinds of activity that are a part of attracting tourism and outside money being spent in our community. Like, what do we do, you know, just as an example, let's say we've got somebody who wants to do the gravel ride and their mom is 80 years old. Like, what is she gonna do? She gravel riding? No, but she might stay in one of the hotels and she might wanna shop or go to an art gallery, or maybe the children's museum will open back up and she might want to go get in touch with her inner child. Who knows what she wants to do. But the whole point is to create opportunities where youngers and olders, and I use those two words very intentionally, because this is not a 12-year-old or 72-year-old. We are all younger or older than someone else, and we are all younger or older than we were yesterday. This includes everyone who is still alive, right?
That's what you said. This program belongs to the community.
Absolutely.
And then I thank you for the correlation. I think, you know, what I see here is Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
I wasn't going to use those words, but since you did, I'm right there with you.
But on the circle?
Yes.
That's exactly what it is.
It is exactly what it is.
It is self-actualization of our community and our families and nucleus of those that live within.
Yes. So, like, now we're speaking at a completely different level, right? Volunteering is a byproduct of self-actualization, right? Like, if I'm trying to figure out how to put tennis shoes on my grandchild's feet for gym class, and I'm one of the people who is food insecure, am I volunteering? Absolutely not. One of the biggest challenges that we have in our food programs right now, which is why Spark the Change is funding the ambassador for creating volunteers in both counties, is to try to attract more volunteers to the food system so that Veronica isn't the one delivering food. Like, from my perspective, and I have said this to her point blank, I think that her talents and insights are much better utilized in terms of overall positive impact on the community through her role as the AAA director by not having to do that, right? The 2 days a week she's not delivering food.
Having experienced the 31st anniversary of my 29th birthday, I really appreciate the narrative. As you're having this dialogue with the other AARP, are you seeing, I see by their letter that the governor is on board with this push, do you see funding opportunities later to help drive this narrative?
Absolutely. Well, number one, I want to say that they're nothing short of thrilled that this conversation is being had. This is not where anybody is expecting for this to take place, which I see as a strategic advantage. They don't see us coming, right? So the surprise factor and the level of appreciation that they have that this conversation is even being had, it's going through my filter, right? Because I'm a huge advocate. So, you know, I'll lean on the side of interpreting their positive remarks as great job, right? But the funding piece is important. One of the constraints, so as a designer, constraints are an important component of the work, right? As a contractor, when I'm doing a piece of work for somebody on their home, time, quality, price, you pick two, right? Because you can't have it tomorrow with the best materials for cheap, right? The system just doesn't function that way. So that's an example of constraints. The constraints that I operate under, there are two of them that are primary constraints for any piece of work that I engage in. One is this an opportunity to do the greatest amount of good for the greatest number of people? Is this a bang for your buck opportunity? The second is that I want to leave the system stronger than when I found it. This might be a remnant of Boy Scouts, I'm not quite sure. It's not a leave no trace, but is like, if it costs a dollar for me to do this work, how much more funding do we need to attract in order to make it justifiable for me to make that dollar, right? So the question on funding is an important one. The unfunded mandates is one example of that. But one of the things that's happening right now, and I don't know how much experience you have like in the nonprofit sector from the perspective of a funder or a foundation, or if you've ever written a grant. I sort of got my sea legs in the nonprofit world in Northeast Ohio, which is where the very first foundation was founded in the United States. And it is the most competitive nonprofit ecosystem in this country. There are more nonprofits than there are funders. And in the financial crisis of 08, I saw a contraction of available funds. And the response to that was B Corp, extra scrutiny on where are we investing our dollars, because those folks are accountable to their boards of directors, and they want to know that if they have less money to invest in the community, that they're going to see a return. And I watched a lot of hands going out asking for funding, and a lot of them came back empty because they were not able to meet the new standard. That has not changed. Like, those levels of scrutiny and accountability, they didn't go away. Like, they still exist. So that's one component. The other piece is, with any problem that has ever existed that has gotten the attention of local governments, of philanthropic organizations, the more awareness there is, the more people are throwing money to solve the problem. It's just the nature of that system, right? So this dynamic of having an aging population is something that is getting more attention. One piece of evidence of that is that there are more communities that are pursuing age-friendly designation, right? There were 18 last year. There's 24 if you're generous with the designation right now. I think we had a conversation about how many municipalities are in the state of Colorado, and I didn't go back and, you know, spend time digging up the exact answer of that, but I think we rested on 600, right? If this is the pie, there's funding out there that is only available to communities that are pursuing age-friendly designation. There's also funding out there that is available to communities to address issues related to aging. If I'm a funder and I'm looking for the best place for me to invest my foundation dollars, and a community comes to me who is pursuing age-friendly designation, and another community comes to me who is not, and I know that the age-friendly community has been doing the work and going through the process and has the sticker, that when I have to sit down and evaluate like opportunities, where do you put your money? I mean, if you're a funder, you are. Where do you put your money? So right now, there are less than 600 age-friendly communities nationwide. There are 24 here in the state of Colorado. What happens? Rural communities are often the last people to sit down to eat, so to speak, right? We're understaffed, under-resourced. You know, maybe our most talented people haven't come back to assume leadership roles. Maybe these small towns don't have a grant writer. Maybe they are so busy with what it is that they're doing that it never occurred to them to pursue this. Never.
Let me ask you a question, Ken.
Yep.
If Los Angeles County moves forward and we can't do anything here today, just so
absolutely.
We opt into making a designation of Los Angeles County as an age-friendly county.
Mm-hmm.
Will that open the funding possibilities for people after grants?
Absolutely.
So if that happens, are you already registered as a 501c3?
No, but I've already pursued two grants that do not require, I'm very clever in this way. We had this conversation, I've considered forming. So in Denver, Dr. Cog, they get 44% of AAA funding. So you look at their website and you Cadillac, right? Like, they have the time and the attention and the resources to like do every bell and whistle you could imagine. Colorado Springs, who is at the end of their first five-year age-friendly plan and at the beginning of their second, has a nonprofit whose sole mission is to advance and spearhead the age-friendly initiative in Colorado Springs. We don't have either of those. Right.
So the reason for my question is,
sure,
yeah, we do that and we move forward, and then it opens up the opportunity for your organization to reach out,
yep,
and receive funding. Will that be reaching out for the same funding that's available to the other programs in the county now? In other words, are we going to go after the same dollars and duplicate the same services?
Well, the ideally, no. And that's why taking a look at the services that are already available and how it is that they're receiving their funding is an initial stage in this process. We're not trying to cannibalize opportunity here. We're trying to create more opportunity.
And I don't know about the rest of you guys, but to hear your comments today and your passion for this is refreshing. It's so nice to see somebody new to our area, outside of Colorado, but within a year, you said, about a year, come in with these great ideas and the passion for our community, for our elderly folks here in Iowa, instead of New York, and suppose that, yeah. But well, all of these issues you've been discussing today, I think, are very valid and need for the community here. Mm-hmm. So the time restraints, we'll probably just close in the comments here, and then we'll move forward with the consideration at our next board meeting of the document. I believe we move forward to future pass of the DocuSign document.
Yeah, that grant has already been submitted.
Okay. So that was something else.
Yeah.
But anyway, as far as this designation, uh-huh. after we're done here in the next 10 minutes or so, you get back to the restoring camp and I have to do the.
How think it was a letter of intent.
Letter of intent.
Sure.
Yeah, something like that. And then we can put that on the board meeting for next week.
Sure.
Or for our next board meeting. And then give our legal counsel an opportunity to review all the ins and outs of
absolutely
your program. But I'm very excited and glad that you're here in our community and supportive of our elderly folks. And
sure.
And just being age friendly.
Yeah.
Because you're right. Sometimes we get so busy, we forget to focus on some of these programs, even though we already have, like I mentioned, we have DHS, we have the AAA program, we have the food program where someone comes out of the woodwork like yourself and reminds us, hey, there's more we need. So thank you for that.
Sure. Can I offer one more thing in the last 10 minutes? So I have been going around to municipalities, and as I mentioned before, I've been talking to so many people I can't even keep their names straight. One of the things that is on the table right now is the opportunity to work with a community that whose city council has already voted in support of this, whose mayor is ready to sign the letter of commitment to AARP. They have their proclamation written, they have their application all filled out and ready to go. I think when I initially conceived of this, I was imagining, and I had this conversation with the governor's office, imagining what it would mean to create the highest density of age-friendly communities in rural southern Colorado. Like, what would that mean? It would mean that as a region, every municipality had in their sights becoming an age-friendly community with the intent of addressing the challenges that they face at a hyper-local level. Keeping in mind that there are similar challenges that everybody in this region faces that can only be effectively addressed when each of those players comes together and joins in addressing that challenge. On the table right now is the opportunity to have a privately funded year-long pilot program in a municipality in Los Animas County that we could start tonight that would give to us the opportunity to see, like, how do they move forward in a way that does not cost the county any money. And I was thinking through this a little bit more, and how do we not cannibalize resources that already exist. And one of the constraints that occurred to me is if all of the departments and all of the programs that are already delivering services. Like the AAA does a great job of what they do for people 60 and up, and the people 50 to 59 are not eligible for any of that, right? Lifelong Colorado is an all ages initiative. It is not just 60 and up, it is everybody. So if these partners will agree to continue providing the services that they currently are, and the extent of their support is just to continue doing what they're doing right now, and that any agreements that the county has for funding or expenditures for things that the county needs to be involved with, that those things continue, and that any solution that this municipality comes up with within the context of their age-friendly plan, that the funding for those solutions is found out in the open market, whether it's through a foundation or a private investment, or if there's an opportunity like in the Colorado Creative Industries in the community revitalization, where they'll do 50% up to 5 million, but you have to be shovel ready. Like if there's an opportunity to bring the shovel ready 50% of that financing with the blessing of the county to pursue the other part of that, if it doesn't interfere with something that's already going on, do you see any reason to not allow that?
You're talking about impacting some of the programs that are under the Lifelong Colorado. Those ones that are not being served with this initiative, which I think would be absolutely, you know, incredibly impactful for the rest of our communities.
Well, the thing that it does, it's in the design world, everything's a prototype, right? Like, this is a prototype for the microphone that takes its place, as is everything in this room. All it is the best thing that we can come up with right now, and there will be another, a better version. The idea is to create prototypes that are low resolution, right? That are not finished products, because we know that the rule of thumb is the first prototype that you come up with, if you go through the design process 7 times, the last prototype is 1,000 times better than the first one. So we don't want to overinvest in the first one, so we want to keep it low resolution. In this community, we have the opportunity for a low resolution prototype that is the next year funded by private money and can serve as a learning opportunity and a laboratory for any other municipality in this region or any other municipality in the state to learn from the experiences of this particular town.
You know what, in the opposite, I mean, I'm just being sensitive to the time limit.
Yes.
One thing that I think we would probably have to do, or we would have to do, is get a hold of every one entity within our county that's providing services.
Yes.
Because as Commissioner Lopez says, you know, they're going to say, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I'm already doing a portion of that program.
Yes.
Trying to take it away from me. He will almost be doing a survey, an assessment, evaluative process of what is happening within the community, and then kind of an open understanding of, oh, we are doing this Lifelong Colorado concept is, it is inclusive of.
Absolutely.
You can stay in your lane, because I can tell you, small communities, that perception becomes reality.
Mm-hmm.
And we wouldn't want this to create a conflict.
Right.
Well, the county commissioners approved it. Well, who do they talk to?
Right.
Well, we didn't talk to anyone. We just,
yeah. Speaking of talking to, a couple of questions for you.
Sure.
I have Governor Wilson yourself in the hall and talking about this better.
Yeah.
Who did you speak with at his office?
Jared.
Who you talked to?
Yeah, Senior Advisor on Aging.
Great.
Same guy I'm going to talk to at 2:30.
So you spoke with Governor Wilson?
I've not spoken with the governor directly.
Jared
Hughes, yeah, he's the governor's senior advisor.
And then with Dola, did you speak with Tara?
Tara, yep.
Okay, that would be a good follow-up to kind of see exactly what this program is, and that will give me a better understanding to share with the board in our next meeting.
Sure.
On what you're presenting today.
Yeah, so this is where I could use your advice and the wisdom of your counsel. The opportunity to fund this pilot program in this community, they're ready to take action in their own little corner of the world today. And while I know that it sounds as though you're supportive of the idea with a little bit of investigation, there's an opportunity to take concrete action that all it does, this first step, all it does is get this community into the age-friendly designated, it gives them the sticker. Because the whole 6 months, easily 6 months, is doing exactly what you said, bringing together all of these people whose expertise and experience and insight and perspective is going to be critical to formulating a plan that supports that community and every community in this county and in this region to move forward without cannibalizing the systems that we already have in place. This first step is simply the sticker on the window. And it is an indication to the state that this is actually happening. So that and the positions, both this community and the region by extension, to now be eligible for funding that they otherwise wouldn't have. And none of that funding is immediately necessary. So there's no risk of like getting ahead of our skis.
We're talking about funding.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the county does not have a slush fund like the city does with marijuana.
It takes no county money.
When we do our budgeting, it goes for that whole year. Yep. And it's got to be budgeted now and budget buses now.
I agree.
But there is a program we have that is available to nonprofits. It was approved by the voters last year.
Mm-hmm.
120,000 we didn't have. We didn't have the nonprofits that we needed. So I'm not sure if we have a designation on that, if they have to be a 501c3 or not. I think it might be on the voters or the ballot.
They have to prove that they are a nonprofit.
So, but that might be a funding source for you. The other funding source that might be available to you is a presentation to the city of Trinidad, because they have that marijuana.
I've been on the phone with them already.
So that might be something for you looking for in the future. As far as us making it, giving an approval or a stamp or anything today, we can't make any decisions in this meeting, in this work session.
Sure.
It's not an agenda item.
I understand.
We'll be glad to put it on, have to do some research for our next board meeting and take it under consideration.
Okay, so I should advise the mayor of this community that we're not going to move forward until we hear back from the county, even though there's private funding to support.
You can go after all the funding you want with private funding.
Yeah.
We can't make a decision here today.
Right.
Yeah. It's unfortunate because it's under.
I understand. I just, what I don't want to do, so one of the things that I'm trying to avoid, because, you know, timing, like what are the odds of all of this happening on the same day, is that I don't, like, I want this mayor to feel comfortable continuing to say yes.
Yeah, Rico?
Yeah.
It's easy to down call.
Okay.
He can call us individually. We can give him our individual opinion.
Okay.
If he feels compelled that he needs an answer from you.
Okay.
He can call us individuals. We can have a discussion with him.
All right.
Individual, but not as a board collective.
Gotcha. So I'm gonna call him when I get out of here, and hopefully he's not up in the mountains.
7 days from now, on the 5th, which is next week.
So I think that should be sufficient time, to think, or is our agenda full?
No, we can always add to that. If I can ask a question, what do you see this pilot program costing?
Costing whom?
Well, what is the amount of
not grant necessarily?
Yeah, the amount of the grant, the private grant dollars that you're saying that
private business person. There's no grant. There's no funding
to do the research.
Yeah,
that's what this pilot program
to cover the first year.
Question is, how much do you foresee it cost the private person, whoever's kicking in the money, $1, $10,
Probably, well, I'm negotiating that with them right now because it depends upon how much of my time they need. And that depends upon the scope of the work that we do. So, you know, it's sort of time, quality, price.
And I think you said the scope, at least the initial part of it, was to reach out to all of you. Yes, I think you refer to them as partners, mm-hmm. those that are already doing some of this work and see what they are and aren't doing.
I've already started. I've been in contact with
that's why this pilot program is going to help cover those.
Part of that, yeah. This pilot program, so I've spent, not counting today because the day's not over, I've spent 527 hours advancing this initiative since the beginning of June. And in that amount of time, I've made connections at the state level, at that letter that I sent to be signed was signed by a county commissioner, a mayor, the school board presidents, the principal of every school, like business, service, direct service providers for young people, direct service providers for older people. The whole point of that letter was to articulate to the funder the depth and breadth of support for pursuing this age-friendly designation in this region.
Well,
and how do you get paid?
Through the private funder. Yeah. Yeah, so the negotiation is between me and that funder.
It's just us giving you the designee.
Yeah, it's just saying, hey, like, it's not going to cost us any money. We think that this is a great idea. We have our own process that we need to go through in order, you know, to advance that within the context of Los Animas County. But if Aguilar has already gone through their own internal mechanisms for vetting and agreeing, and city council, like when I made this presentation, every person who was sitting in that gallery stood up and clapped because, like all of us, they're living it. So what would be great, and I think that I got my answer, is to be able to call Phil and say, hey, give them a call, votes tonight, and that you might receive a phone call from him between now and then.
Very well. Great. Thank you for your presentation. Awesome job. And thank you for being with us today. And thank your father for inspiring you to do this here in your own backyard.
Yeah, I'll tell you, he's a man of few words, but boy, do they sting. He knows just how to put his hand on my head and drive me through a crowd.
He knows our pressure points.
He knows them. Right. Yeah.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chapman.
Thank you very much.
Motion to adjourn, please. Motion to adjourn.
Second, Mr. Friesen.
Yes.
Mr. Hess.
Yes.
Mr. Friesen.
Yes, thank you. All right. I've got a few